been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win.
Welcome to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, broadcasting live every Thursday from the Woodlands, Texas. I'm your host, Daniel Goodwin. Joining me in the studio today is Grant Crow. Grant is the CEO, and Grant, you started your company, The Urban Foresters, I was reading 6 years ago, correct?
Yes, sir.
Yep. We're going to get deep into Grant's story and his journey as an entrepreneur, but we are also delighted to have Dr. John Newbold from the College of Business at Sam Houston State University. And Dr. John, are you guys back from holiday, or are you still trying to figure out where all the students are?
Yeah, we're still waiting for the students to return. Our first day back at school is actually on January the 18th, after Martin Luther King Day.
January 18th. Okay, and you've got classes going right here in the Woodlands, the hubbub right here, but the mothership, of course, is in Huntsville, Texas.
That's correct.
And you do some teaching back and forth between the two?
That's right. A lot of the faculty in the College of Business will be teaching classes both up in Huntsville and down in the Woodlands at the Woodlands Center.
And for our listeners, don't forget that your area of expertise at the university is in marketing, and so you're part of our brain trust. If you have marketing questions, you have marketing ideas you want to share with the entrepreneurship team at the Shrimp Tank Podcast, then just let our executive producer, Miss Catherine Bates, know about that. So welcome back, Catherine. She's back from a major neck surgery, and now she's just going up and down the stairs like nobody's business. So anyway, let's just get a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about entrepreneurship in general before we just dive completely into your story, Grant. And our entrepreneurship team got together, and we wanted to share with you today is New Year's resolution. By the way, I want to say one of our last shows, we had a big celebration because, those of us that don't worry about being politically correct, we were pretty jazzed about the Trump election. Lots of entrepreneurs. Hey, you guys are smiling. I'm not getting any, scorn over that, but we're very excited about that. And we're excited about the new year, and for some people that's resolutions, but the entrepreneurship team wanted to share with you just some suggested or recommended reading, and to get a complete list, you'll need to contact the executive producer, Catherine Bates, through the houston.shrimptankpodcast.com website, but here they go. I just have time to read a couple, and then we'll get into Grant's story, but one book is called The Lean Startup by Eric Ries, and Eric Ries teaches readers how to develop their business and products faster. It's a great book to read if you're feeling like things are moving a little slower in your business or taking too long. Another is The 4 Steps to Epiphany by Steve Blank. And Steve provides readers with actionable information about why startups succeed while others fail. Then there's a great book called Rework by Jason Fried. And Jason helps business owners zero in on what actually matters when it comes to business success. He also gives a number of great recommendations on how to boost productivity and to build strong teams. Next, we have Delivering Happiness by Tony Heisch. And Tony teaches readers how to develop unforgettable customer service and corporate culture programs. So why don't I cut it off right there and just tell you it's a great recommended reading list. We're all striving to be successful entrepreneurs because, hey, it's not the easiest thing in the world, is it, Grant?
Negative. No.
Yeah. And Dr. John, what do they say about some of the numbers about, people go out and they start a business, they muster up the courage, and how many of them make it?
Only about half of them.
Yeah. So only about half. And what I was reading is that 25% of these startups fail during the first year. And ultimately, over 5 years, about half of them fail. And so why is that? I guess lots of different reasons, but maybe some of them should fail, Maybe they were in an inferior idea or inferior business. But for those that succeed, it's Grant, is it one of the harder things you've ever done?
Yeah, definitely. I would say we continue to try not to fail. It doesn't. I haven't yet experienced making it, air quotes, on the radio. Maybe that doesn't make sense for on the radio. But yeah, it's continuing a struggle. But that is part of why I love it. Guys that do what I do and that start businesses, I've people I've met tend to be self-improvement type people. They see their business as a way to get better or a way to improve their lives or other people's lives. And so you can never put that down. I think if you put that idea down of improvement or just trying to get better, I'm pretty sure your business would fail.
Yep. Lifelong learning. And, you know, if you ever get to that place where you feel like you've arrived, maybe that's a really dangerous place to be. You know, maybe that means you stop sharpening the saw and you start staying focused. But getting into your bio a little bit, tell us, where did you grow up?
I grew up always in the Houston area, and I grew up my younger years in Spring, not far from where we're recording today or where we're broadcasting from today. And then when I was 12, we moved out to Fort Bend County. I grew up, you know, went to high school at Lamar Consolidated High School and went off to A&M after that. And
Aggie.
Yeah, I'm not really one of the real, you know, crazy people. I'm not going to hit you over the head with
but
it.
But you got your ring on. I saw your ring, right?
I had a really great experience. I learned a ton and I'm not mad at anybody.
Yeah. So you had a Texas A&M university experience and then your degree was it in forestry or?
Yeah.
Or?
Actually, one of the rare guys that is doing something sort of related to his degree. I'm really actually not practicing forestry in the classical sense. Forestry, for a lot of people that have no idea what that is, but that's the wood and paper products industry is really what I was trained in at the university. And now I care for more individual trees or groups of trees in the urban setting. But yeah, it's related to trees. So that's what I got my degree in.
So it says here that some people feel like you eat, sleep, and breathe trees, but that's not exactly true. You got a family and a baby on the way. And
I do. Yeah, our number four. We're calling the baby Quattro.
Quattro.
We're a surprise family. We never do the the finding out ahead of time. So I have a little girl and two little boys that are little animals. So my daughter and my wife are praying for another daughter.
Fabulous. That's wonderful. So your university degree got you a start. You worked for another company for a number of years, but in 2010, you had an entrepreneurial moment. And that was a convergence of maybe some of your education, your experience, and you put the entrepreneur hat. Tell us just a little bit about that and kind of how that manifests itself for you to go out and make the start and put it on the line.
Yeah, it's exactly what you would think, a culmination of environmental factors, I guess, things influencing you. And I had always, but even before 2010, I knew I wanted to do something different. I've always not been a guy that wanted to go with the status quo. And but I never wanted to own a tree care company, oddly enough. I was an arborist. I was selling for another company. And the company I worked for was acquired by a much larger organization, and it really changed the culture. And I have no hard feelings to those guys who sold the company. Or, you know, you might think I'm mad at them or something, but they did a really hard thing. You know, trying to sell a company and integrate cultures into a much larger organization is tough. And I was just one of the guys that just didn't fit with the new group. And I saw a lot of people around me that also weren't real happy anymore. And that's what it was. It was the people around me who weren't happy anymore. And I just believe that if you do something for 40 or 50 or 60 hours a week, like work, and that experience for you is really not good, your life is going to suffer. I mean, what we do at work, I mean, you don't do anything else for as much time as we do work. Mm-hmm. I mean, I treasure my wife and I love my kids and my faith is really important to me, but I don't do any of those things nearly the amount of time that I do work. And I just saw people that were unhappy at work. And I knew I was going to do something. I was going to make a company. If it was just me and a couple guys in a truck, work was going to be good for us. It was going to be a positive thing.
Grant, I got a question about that. A lot of people might find themselves in that situation where they're sort of dissatisfied at work or there's been a significant change like that. I think most people tend to say, I want to go look for a new job with a different company. What do you suppose made you more inclined to want to start up a company?
Great question.
Man, that is a good question. You know, I don't think going to find another place. I'd seen a lot of companies, you know, I'd seen other friends with the same, you know, the movie Office Space, right? Where they just have this dismal experience at work. And I think it was something that it's probably a gift, honestly. My beliefs tell me that this isn't about me. You know, I'm just a guy. It's something that was, I know you would rather have a great tidbit for the listeners.
Well, you heard what he said, John. He said he didn't fit in. And you know what? Entrepreneurs don't fit in a lot of corporate structures. They don't like, people pushing their buttons and telling them exactly how it's going to be. And they have a vision of things. And
I'm guessing that for a lot of people, you go, well, I could go work for that company, but it's a lot like this company. The culture, in other words, the whole industry can have a prevailing culture or whatever it might be that you don't fit in. So I'm guessing a lot of people start up a new company because they have a very different idea of how they want the company to run.
I think entrepreneurs, sometimes you do get a really arrogant guy who just, I can do it better and we do it this way and da 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 da. A lot of entrepreneurs probably get a bad rap for being arrogant because they do have an idea. They have an idea, they have a vision of it being better, and it's not an arrogant thing. They really believe they do. And that's probably when I think back, other guys at the company, my foreman, guys who work for me, they were telling me, man, Grant, you got to go do something. We don't like it here. Go start something and I'll work for you.
I'll come with you.
Huh? Yeah. The guys were telling me. I didn't even realize it about myself.
They saw something in you.
Yeah.
Maybe you hadn't yet realized. I want to say to our listeners that if you're thinking about becoming an entrepreneur, Shrimp Tank's a knockoff of Shark Tank, okay? And Shark Tank has swept the country. And I just want to say to listeners, it's not axiomatic that you need to go become an entrepreneur, because it almost is something that needs to flow through your DNA. And I have a lot of friends that have done very well in the corporate culture, and they've, climbed the ladder and done very well. And not everybody is suited to be an entrepreneur. You're going to work twice as much. All this talk about work-life balance, a lot of millennials they covet the work-life balance. You may not have a lot of work-life balance. You're going to need a spouse that is going to be understanding and tolerant of you. It makes me think of this business owner client of ours right down the street. He slept for 2 years under his desk, had no idea, cashed in the 401k, and he's got a $7-8 million company now. But he said for the first 2 years, he had no idea if they would survive or not. So with that in mind, our producer's telling us we need to run to a commercial break. We're going to be back just shortly. And don't go away. You're listening to the Houston Shrimp Tank Podcast. You can download a complete replay of the show at houston.shrimptankpodcast. Don't forget, also, our shows are now on iTunes. The Urban Foresters provides tree care services to commercial residential properties throughout Texas. We emphasize understanding the needs of the client and meeting those needs with an uncommon level of intimacy. What we do in day in and day out is care for trees, which is trimming, removal, and fertilization. But tree care is what, and the people care is the why. Contact us at 855-255-5212 or visit us at theurbanforesters.com. And we are back with Shrimp Tank Podcast, broadcasting live from studio. I'm your host, Daniel Goodwin at Provident. Joining me in the studio today is Grant Crowell with the Urban Foresters, and from the Sam Houston State University Entrepreneurship Degree Program is Dr. John Newbold. And we're getting into Grant's story, a little bit of his bio. He started this company 6 years ago. He's got 30 employees. He went out and got his education first. He worked at a company. He learned a little bit about about himself. And then in 2010, you said, "Hey, man, I got to go do this. All sorts of reasons." Did you know in your heart that you had to go make the move?
Yeah, I mean, I could do the math and realize that this could be a financial thing. This could be, my retirement. This could be, who knows what it could turn into. But it really wasn't the motivation. It was about the people around me and my happiness as well. I mean, I was newly married. I literally got married, started a business, moved, and we got pregnant in a 6-month period. Like, it was wild. But my wife could look at me at my old company and say, "You're not happy. What's going on?" So I knew I had to do something.
Yep. downstairs when we were getting ready for your show, we were talking about being an entrepreneur and how you went and you got an education about forestry, trees, whatnot. That's your business, your bailiwick, so to speak. But now that you're the man running the business, you wear all these sorts of hats. You wear the marketing hat, of which Dr. Newbold's an expert in. You also, are accounting all flows up to you. So does human resources and client service and systems and processes. And, how do you make sense of that? And how do you wear all those hats when you're just one guy?
Yeah. Ultimately, it all does kind of fall to me. But the most challenging thing I've tried to do yet in the last 6 years was to develop a true leadership team. And that's what the team and myself have been working on for the last probably 2 or 3 years. I've hired, like any guy that doesn't know what he's doing when he first starts out, you start hiring people to help you. And you just hire people that hopefully you know them and trust them. And that's kind of what I did. I hired a buddy, and I hired, a guy that I knew pretty well from church. And that is my leadership team today. It's pretty scrappy. But we've all committed to developing ourselves into the people that the company needs us to be. So, for instance, we didn't have a sales guy, like a really trained salesperson, a sales manager, someone who understood sales theory. So Jason, one of the guys, my college buddy, right? We just said, okay, man, do you want to go be the sales guy? We're going to find the best sales training we can in town, and we're going to send you. And it's probably not the right way. If you read a business book or any kind of management theory, you'd probably go find a salesperson already who was already trained and hire them. But it's just how the company came together. I would say that we're pretty fiercely loyal now. Our team is fiercely loyal to each other because of that. We've come through a lot of really hard, like personal, I mean, just like when you get into running a company and none of you are classically trained to run a company, you hurt each other a lot. You hurt each other's feelings. I mean, it sounds maybe a little soft, but it's really, really true. I mean, the management of a company, I'm realizing, is less and less about sort of technocratic management, like technique and do it this way, as it really is about people. Mm. It really is about understanding how to function with other people with really different personalities. And we added that, we added the fact that none of us are trained. We're becoming trained, but that's been the hardest part. I would say going from zero, and in my business structure, probably the $1.5 to $2 million mark was actually easier because I didn't have a leadership team. And honestly, it's a fault of mine. I didn't have a leadership team to be accountable to. I had no one to be.
Yeah. What's your thoughts about that, Dr. Newbold?
Well, I just want to ask Grant, I think it's interesting what he's talking about is that in an employee, when you're scaling up your company and hiring people, there's a couple of different aspects you would think about. One would be what are their what's their value system? Are they somebody you can trust? Are they somebody who's going to persevere? Somebody who's going to stick with you when things get tough? And then there are the what I'll call the professional skills. Does this person, for example, know how to do a sales call or how to manage a sales force? And I would argue that you probably didn't do it the wrong way. You kind of act like, well, I kind of, but really you could hire a really good salesperson, for example, who doesn't feel the same sort of commitment to you or to the company, and that could create a problem down the line. I would argue that it might even be easier to train yourself up the way you guys did.
Right.
And know that you've got some committed loyal
I'm so with you on that, because what you decided to do was to grow your own, essentially. And the underpinning of that whole idea is trust, because think about the alternative. You bring somebody in and you have to pour into them so much of your energy and heart and soul, and you don't even know if you can trust them or not. At least you knew these guys that you ran with from college or wherever your background, you at least knew you could trust them.
Correct.
And then you said, hey, you're smart enough with some good training, go, and if you want this, if you get it and you want it and, you have the capacity, I agree. I agree completely. And, there's not necessarily always a right or wrong way to do it, but I'd rather go to work alongside somebody that I just knew I trusted necessarily than, guy could be a sales wizard, but if I can't trust the guy, should we give a shout out there to your leadership team?
Jason Jesko and Jacob Rodriguez. Jason Jesko is our sales vice president, and Jacob Rodriguez is our operations vice president. So that, kind of two pillars of the company.
That's fabulous. And quote that sticks with me from one of my coach and mentors, he said that great leaders do not create followers, that they create other leaders. And it sounds like you've moved these guys into leadership positions. They also say build your leadership team and they'll build your business. And so great job with that. So I think that we started to get a little bit into a conversation about culture. Tell us kind of the culture that you're looking to create there at the Urban Foresters.
Well, we have three core beliefs at the company. They are charity, fortitude, and humility. And if those sound super Catholic, it's because we're Catholics. it's pretty out there. We really had a lot of discussion at the leadership level as to whether or not we should just say hard work, use more modern terminology. And we just back and forth and round, and we just decided, let's stick with some more, just a little more ancient terminology. And what we mean by all that, charity, what is that? Well, that's really giving of yourself. That's just something that we've always, and for us, it's giving of ourselves for God. That's why. Why would I give myself like that? Because my belief is if I'm just giving to you because, you're a guy, you're nice, I'm going to run out of giving. I have a limit, it's more transactional. But if I say, look, man, if you come work here, it's really you're coming into more than a company. And we give to each other here. And whatever you need, you come to me. Okay. Fortitude, that's really born out of what the work is. Tree work is really hard. I mean, it's difficult. It's hot.
Sounds like dangerous, right? You end up in the bottom end of one of those shredders. Yeah, it's a bad day, right?
Yeah. We have a safety meeting every Wednesday and Jacob reads out this industry statistics. I mean, it's a dangerous business. It's hot. It's dirty. And then the sales guys, they work hard too. I mean, it's tough to do what we do. It's hard. It's just hard work. And we commit to... And we always have, right? These core beliefs aren't aspirational. These are, we look backwards and said, what characterizes the Urban Foresters? And last, humility. And this is I gotta be honest, this is my hardest one because I think I can conquer the world, right? And there is a truth about me though. I don't know if that's, let that sink in a little bit. My generation has been told, you can do it. You can do it. If you want it, you can get it. It's really false. There are things I cannot do. There are things I don't have the skills for. That's not true about me. And I have recently come into contact with that. And so it's pushed me into a place of kind of, I would say, discernment. Like, what is the truth about me? What is where's the state in life where I kind of, it's where I fit. I'm not flying around in private jets and I'm probably going to hurt myself or other people if I try to push for that right now. But I'm also, I don't want to be rubbing my foot in the dirt and, I can't really do anything. And because that's also not true. Right. And I would fail as a leader because my organization would go into the ground if I kept saying that.
So, your business is trees, but it's underpinned with ideals, and those three cornerstones for you are charity, fortitude, and humility. And you can tell from your heart in the conversation that we're having here, this is not a flimsy slogan for you. Mm-hmm. And it's also, you can tell there's a buy-in in your team of people, which you have around 30 people now, and you're still a small young business, but, you really look like you're going the right way by building up your organization from within. And that is, if you're listening, you're an aspiring entrepreneur. A lot of this stuff's not always just sexy and exciting. A lot of it is just, the reality of doing the hard work and having a vision and having a focus and really believing in something that can provide direction of your company. Sure. Yeah. Good.
I've got a question. It's a little bit different than the culture question, but it has to do with the way you go after target markets. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about you do both commercial business and residential business, so you do both. How did the business start out? Did you start out with a big commercial contract or trying to seek residential? And as you've grown, I talk to a lot of people in small businesses and they tend to take the approach of like, man, whoever will come in the door, that's who I'll work for. Whoever calls me up, did you perhaps start out a little bit that way and now you're a little bit more choosy, or how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, great question. I did start out, I literally started out with a pickup truck and a rented trailer, and I was doing tree trimming myself. I mean, that was 2010. And now I was a salesperson for another company, but I had enough sense and ethics not to just go poach every single client I could find, you know, 10 days after I left, right? So in the beginning, yes. I mean, I was trimming my parents' trees. I was doing neighbors down the street, whatever it took. And but pretty quickly thereafter, I realized the value of look, if I'm going to go meet somebody, if I meet you, John, you know, and say, hey, John, you got a house? Does it have a tree in front of it? Okay, great. Let me trim that for you. It'll be $200. Great. Thank you. Now, I could be more thoughtful and say, John, you work at the university. Do you happen to know the facilities guy there? Or you don't know him really well. Do you know someone who knows him? And that's how we built it, right? We got involved with trade associations where large quantities of real estate are managed, basically, right? If I can meet one really great property manager and she trusts me and I take great care of her and she manages hundreds of trees.
And you're on the list.
Yeah. And I'm now her tree guy, right? That's how we're able to grow quickly. Now, we never left the residential space behind, and people find us and we do good work and we help them. This year, in the last 6 months, I've amped up our exposure to the residential market to finally answer the question for myself as to whether or not residential is what we really want to focus on. And I think any business growing needs to find their ideal client. Even for us, all we do is trees. I mean, there's other companies that do trees and grass. And I mean, I can't imagine all that.
Doesn't mean you can't serve other clients other than your ideal client, right. But it might mean that you pour your heart and your energy into acquiring, you know, the right kind of clients, which could be the more, you know, the most profitable. Sure. I would guess that maybe your margins are a little different between the commercial accounts and the residential sort of things when you're doing one off.
Cost of sales on residential is really high.
By the way, you're listening to the Shrimp Tank podcast, where we interview Houston's best and brightest entrepreneurs. We're here in the studio today with Grant Crowell. And don't forget, you can always download a complete replay of the show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. So, Grant, getting a little bit more into your story, and got a couple of more questions. You know, these entrepreneur skills that you maybe weren't necessarily born with, or you didn't necessarily glean in college. Tell us a little bit how you've picked up some of your skill set along the way to be able to run a company like you have now that's approaching, you know, $4 million in revenue.
Yeah. I did a lot of reading. Before I ever started a company, I was involved with a real estate investing group, and I bought houses and done some other things. And so I started what I call now the pop culture business reading, right? Your Rich Dad, Poor Dad, like the Seven Habits book, you know. Just really what I would call sort of foundational.
Good foundations.
Yeah, good foundations, sure. Of kind of having the right mentality. And then I continued to read and read and read and read and read, just all throughout the time. I read Good to Great in 2010, right when I...
Fabulous books.
Yeah, right when I launched off. And that's, you know, it gave me a lot of... my head was in the clouds. I was like, I'm going to have the greatest tree trimming company of all time. You know, it still may happen, right? But it's a lot harder, you know. Lots of personal reading. And then I was, you know, somehow exposed to the business coaching idea, the concept, right? Like I can't just read a book and discern what it means for me right now. I need a mentor. I need a coach. So I went and did like a 2-year program with a business coach out, the guy that I met through the Fortman Chamber. And
Can you tell us, I mean, anything about that or what that was centered around? Or
you know, it was a franchise coaching system that, you know, as I've kind of grown up in entrepreneurism, I realized there's lots of systems, right? There's this guy's 5 habits. There's this guy's 7 secrets. There's this guy's 2 laws. There's a lot of that out there. And I get it. Every business book writer or every coach is trying to brand their way.
Yeah.
Just pick a way. That's my advice. Like it's not that the 7 secrets is better or worse than the 5 laws or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Just pick one. And go with it. Go all in with it. Get your systems in place based off of what that guy's thing says. You have to have continuity is what I'm sharing sort of one of my downfalls is that I've got purple squirrel all over the place. I'm as a business guy, he's got the three this. I'm gonna do this one now. And my team is going, hey bro, we just finished with the 5 secrets.
I'm looking. Like, I'm looking to see if Babette and Catherine are like, are they making faces about
me.
Are
there knives?
They're pointing.
They're knives. Let me. If I could, I'll tell you continuity, man. Like,
I just got diagnosed with purple squirrel.
Purple squirrel syndrome. Yeah.
Yeah, I got that.
So the coaching.
I got it.
The coaching thing that I did. It was a 2-year thing. It just really helped me to. Honestly, I knew I needed an HR system. I'd read enough books to know I needed it, but to have somebody that I'm paying to keep me accountable, I'm going to have to go to that round table next month and tell everyone, no, I didn't get my HR system built out.
Oh,
and you just feel terrible because they're all looking at you going, what's wrong with you? You know, like, why didn't you get that? It's like when you're in the gym, right? And if you go to the gym alone, you guys go, you're all looking at me like, I don't go to the gym. You go to the gym alone. You go to the gym alone, you're doing 3 sets of 10,
I'm
right?
I'm a slacker in the gym, I'll be honest.
Yeah, you go to 3 sets of 10. I hate the gym, just to be honest. You go 3 sets of 10, and on the third set, you're at 8, and you're like, oh, I can't do anymore. It's literally mentally. Your muscles will do it. But if you had a personal trainer over your head, you'll do 12. And that's just been my experience.
Right. He's right about
you'll
that.
You'll do 12. So I got a group of people, and it was way back when, 2011, 12, 13. But that was the first coaching experience I'd had.
Mm-hmm. What? Let me ask you a question related to that, though. For a lot of entrepreneurs, when they begin to scale their business, they must get, I think for a lot of them, they must get to a point where they go, man, I didn't start this business to be an HR guy and to figure out all these systems. And so did you get to a point like that? Has your business gotten to a point where some of those issues of managing a larger operation, you're finding things that you hadn't anticipated you were going to be dealing with?
Yeah, they aren't my passion.
They really drag you down.
Yeah, it's out of duty at this point. You know? I mean, I just have a perspective that I have a duty to this organization, and it's part of my personal journey to keep this thing going. So while I would, this company doesn't exist for me to do what I want to do or to experience what I want to experience. So certain times I have to do stuff I don't want to do. Now, if you just do that all the time, I think you're probably going to burn out, right? And you're going to fail.
I'm thinking you'd be saying, like, I got into this because I enjoy trees and doing trees.
Exactly.
And I find I haven't been out by a tree in months.
Right. That very much is the case. And so how do you get an HR person when that person costs $55,000 a year and you can't afford that? We've outsourced a lot. So if you call, and just, I don't have any problem saying, if you call the office, it's a service that's answering that phone. And they're very, very well trained on how to understand who's calling for what, and then route that to the right person inside the company, right? We outsource all bookkeeping, all back office accounting, everything is outsourced. And I've done the math basically where, you know, if we hit $8 million in revenue, we need a person in house. Because paying to outsource it now, it flips the other way.
Sure.
But all those things, so I don't have to do too much of that. The biggest drag, like, I would love just to drive around in my pickup, look at trees, and talk to people. Mm-hmm. You'd come up with
pink squirrel ideas.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Come up with more ideas. I'm their R&D guy, right?
Yeah.
You pay me just to think of new stuff. But that's not realistic, right? So, you know, 50% of my time is probably more than 50%.
Okay, guys, producer's telling me we need to run to a commercial break. We'll be right back. Don't forget, you're listening to the Houston Shrimp Tank Podcast.com. We're live in studio today with Grant Crow and Dr. John Newbold. Don't go away. We will be right back. A recent Forbes article stated that 4 out of 5 business owners are overpaying their taxes. Ouch! Don't let that be you. Contact the tax team at Provident to explore how you can pay only what you are required to pay and not a penny more. Our strategic partner CPAs and tax lawyers will use our exclusive tax blueprint to help you reduce your taxes now. Call us at 281-466-4843. And we are back live in the studio with the Houston Shrimp Tank Podcast. Don't forget, you can download a complete replay of the show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. Don't forget, our shows are on iTunes. We're live in studio today in January, first of the year, with Grant Crow and also Dr. John Newbold from the Sam Houston State University College of Business, doing a deep dive on Grant's journey as an entrepreneur. You're teaching us a lot of great things about planning, culture, leadership, wearing lots of different hats as an entrepreneur. You've had a success story. You started with nothing. You've made it past the 5 years in which half the small businesses fail. You have 30 employees, leadership team. You guys are going places, moving, shaker, doing things. I think it's awesome. Thank you so much for coming in to the studio today. We have a few more questions on and Dr. Newbold, anything that that you want to interject? But I know I got a few more questions I would like to get to.
I'd like to ask one more, and this is one that I always get a lot of insight from this, and that is, Grant, if you could just describe, if there's a typical day, tell me what time does your day start? What do you end up doing? What time do you end up wrapping up your day? And what are you doing the whole time?
I typically do a 12-hour day. And that looks like there's a little bit of personal in here and a lot of company, but I can address that later wearing different hats thing. I get up at 5 and I leave the house pretty much immediately. 5:15, I'm out the door. And then I get to my office. It's about 10 minutes away. And I spend an hour in prayer. That's how I get my day going. By about 6:30, I'll either have a check-in phone call with my leadership guys, with Jason and Jacob. Jacob offices are the same place I do, so sometimes he's sitting in my office and I'm on the phone with Jason. We just do a 10-minute stand-up. Like, if we had a big office, we would come and have a stand-up meeting. We wouldn't sit down. Just, what are you doing today? Da-da-da-da-da-da. What are you doing today? And the reason for that is to have coordination. If something in that 10-minute meeting, oh man, you're going to go by there? Will you bring this when you go? Just those mm-hmm. little things, having a real meeting, a stand-up cuts down on the 19 emails that would have addressed that one 10-minute meeting. From that point, by about 10:45, man, there's dudes running everywhere in the shop. There's guys, there's trucks, they're moving. All of our work orders are digitally distributed through a software, right? Through an online web-based, cloud-based software. But even though every foreman has his tablet with what he's supposed to do that day, there's still a lot of questions, right? You know, maybe a sales guy forgot to upload it and that foreman doesn't have anything on his tablet, or this chipper tire got flat. Those aren't my primary roles, but I'm still there. That's something relatively new. I spent a whole couple of years away from the nuts and bolts of the business, and I think it was a mistake. Just from the top to the bottom, my team seeing me was really important, and I wasn't there.
Well, this brings me to a question, because I know you must have a lot of fixed cost. If you have employees, that's fixed cost. You have offices, but you have to have a lot of equipment in this business too. How did you get this all going? You know, did you get investors? Did you take on debt? It takes money. It takes money to make money. Yeah. You know, you're looking out on, I want to build this great company. It's going to cost a lot of money. You know, where'd you find the money? Did you do it through a business plan? Tell us a little bit about that.
The rented trailer I just rented. So, I was able to get a bank to loan me $75,000 to start. And that'll buy you a used chipper truck and a used chipper and some equipment.
Was that an SBA loan?
No, it was just through my bank. Okay. Yeah, just through the bank. It wasn't SBA. And I actually got my dad to co-sign.
Okay.
There were no additional partners in the company. I had a 5% partner, but he's a guy that had a new from college. Again, he had gone on to get an MBA. And I said, man, can you just, if I have questions, can I just call you? I'll give you 5% of the business if you'll just be my sweat equity, mm-hmm. call you, help me with this guy. And he did he helped me a ton in the beginning, but no extra money. So we got that one truck. It was a good running truck, used, you know, and my plan, you know, a brand new chipper truck costs you $85,000. Okay. And then a brand new chipper is going to cost you $40,000 to $50,000. Mm-hmm. Now starting out, I was looking at these used ones over here going, well, I can buy a used chipper truck for $10,000 and I can buy a used chipper for $20,000. And the used truck and the used chipper generates the same amount of revenue every day as the brand new one. And now, to Mickey Mouse math, that made a lot of sense to me. I learned through experience of this. So we just bought lots of used stuff. We just cash flowed everything.
Kind of did what you had to do, because cash flow is driving all of these decisions, right?
We cash flowed everything. So we're still very debt lean. So, you know, we'll finance every other thing. It's kind of a, we don't really have a capital plan, but finance that, buy that with cash. Finance that, buy that with cash. It's just, it just kind of comes up when it comes up. What we noticed though was that over the time, over several years, fixing old crusty equipment and the headache associated with fixing it and the
downtime,
the missed promises to customers because of the broken thing, yeah. and then just the mental crazy associated yeah. with kind of running a mechanic shop and running a tree trimming operation. We had a switch in, I switched the mentality about 2 years ago and started taking a little more leverage, and we buy new stuff now. And yeah. that's kind of how, but we couldn't have done that. I had no credit, nothing.
Yeah, you had to do what you had to do in the beginning. So, you know, in your business, and you said it's hard work, can you think of any like a particularly funny or scary story that you guys have had since you opened this business?
Man, funny and scary would be two different stories.
Yeah. What jumps out at you?
We have we have had some injuries. None of them, you know, God love us, we've never had anybody die. I mean, that happens every week in my industry. No one's ever had like a terrible, you know, we've never had a terrible, terrible.
Must
you know,
have someone, some hefty insurance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's quite expensive to insure what we do. Just to give you an idea, like if you're a, you know, landscaper, if you do groundwork and your people stay below 8 feet, it's say $7 per $100 of payroll. Mine is 15, and we're a really, really solid contractor. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of injuries on our record, but funny stories. It's hard for me to think funny and scary at the same time.
Have you ever chopped down the wrong tree?
Ooh.
I don't think we have, but I have a story about a guy who is at Schlumberger at their campus in Sugar Land, and they cut down the wrong tree right in front of the president's office.
Ow.
Yeah, it happens. I carry lots of orange paint in the toolbox in the back of my truck. So if it's a removal, we put a big old orange X on it so that no one cuts the wrong tree down.
I got a little philosophical question to ask you. So suppose that someone from the Donald Trump new incoming you know, regime calls you up and said, Grant, you know, what can our government do to support small business owners? What pops into mind for you? What would you think that the government needs to do or not do? Or?
You know, honestly, at the federal level, politics is local for me, man. I mean, like paying the county's property tax. That's an interesting thing for guys that wouldn't think, right? I don't own a building, but I pay property tax on a lot of equipment. I pay property tax on my trucks. But as an individual, right, you've never paid property tax on your personal car. You pay the registration tax, the sales tax, but I've got 6, 7, 8 chipper trucks, 6, 7, 8 chippers. All this stuff gets property tax on it. So I would say, you know, property tax relief on a state level, a county level, that's real dollars and cents. You know, I don't know if I'm more of a government stay out of my hair kind of guy. You know,
how about healthcare issues at this point? Are you dealing with Obamacare with your 30 employees?
No, we're not.
Trump's getting ready to deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't. I mean, gosh, I can't imagine shouldering the expense of insuring all my employees. I mean, it's just something that it's not even on the P&L right now. We don't spend money.
So they insure themselves.
Yeah, they're going through the exchanges or whatever it is that they're all doing. It's not a function of the company. And that would be a huge thing if we had to take that on. None of us are versed in how to do that.
What do you think about the idea about working smarter, not harder? What's your thoughts about that?
Yeah, that brings me back to your ideal client. You know, I mean, that's where it's at. I mean, you can't get away from fortitude. I know a lot of people that are, and back to this, you know, technocratic view of management that you can just systematize good business and you just push the button and it's all going to happen. It's really not that way. I mean, there is a place to work hard, but by thinking you can do a whole lot where you really shouldn't be doing it, man, that's such a mistake. I would, at this point, I would rather find the 80-20 rule, right? Find 80% of your best clients and really focus. You said it earlier, focus on them, spend money acquiring them, advertise for them, do all that. Don't spend a dime on the 20% that you don't want. Mm-hmm. You know, that I would rather go through the difficulty of opening a branch in the DFW market and focus on my ideal client there, then get bigger in Houston and service everybody.
Mm-hmm. It'd be easier. Try to be all things to everybody.
It'd literally be easier to scale and move and open a new office, but only do one thing.
So, mm-hmm. Going back to some of the things Grant said earlier, you know, talking about work-life balance, working smarter, not harder. You know, here's a guy after my own heart. I think that he endeavors in all ways to work smarter, not harder, but the guy works really hard too. Okay. Your competition is trying to work smarter, not harder, and they're working. Sometimes you got to do both, especially in the startup. You know, you don't want to be killing yourself 20 years from now and alien, you know, what good are we to anyone if we make a gazillion dollars and we alienate ourselves from our family, mm-hmm. or we wreck our health? What did we accomplish in the end? So I think you have a great perspective about that. You're working smarter, not harder. And I can tell you work very hard bringing this up, having a vision, creating a leadership team, mastering all these areas of the different hats that an entrepreneur needs to wear. And so
I'd stop short of mastery. I wouldn't put me as a master.
I guess we're all endeavoring to find mastery, but it's a lifelong journey. Is that fair to say, Dr.
Yep,
Newbold?
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure. So, okay. Executive producer, Miss Bates is like giving me the stink eye saying, "Hey boys, we need to wrap this show up.
We need to go to lunch and keep talking, guys.
You know what? The time always goes by so fast. And you've been listening to the great show today with Grant Crowell of the Urban Foresters. And if you need any work, their help, or any of your commercial account or residential account, Grant, tell our listeners the best way to get in touch with you and your company.
Either call the office, 855-255-5212, or go to houston-treeservice.com. Fill out the form.
Dr. Newbold, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. It's been a wonderful show. It's been a real pleasure to meet you and to learn about the principles that direct your life and your position at the company and the great things that you're doing in our community and for the people in your company that are benefiting from your servant's heart and your leadership skills that you're applying to your company. So, great show. Don't forget, you can download a complete replay. The shows are on iTunes, and we're going to see you here next week live on Shrimp Tank Podcast. Shrimp Tank, when it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. Welcome to the Shrimp Tank. Doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This just what I do and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, but homie keep going. You know the saying, you gon' reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016. Like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general, from the front I'm a leader. The charge like a federal fell on my lap, never going hard as ever. The results match the effort. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank, big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.